My first introduction. It's very exciting. I'm the Peach, and this is...
I'm the Colonel.
Very good, and we very, very happily have here today with us on this wonderful Saturday afternoon, Trevor Jones, musical director of the current production of Avenue Q.
How are you doing?
At Her Majesty's.
Oh, that sounds so fancy.
I know, it's very exciting. Tickettech.com.au for your photos. For those of you,
I mean, love tickets. That the plug and the website get out in the first 10 seconds.
Yeah. Just do it. That's the thing. You just got to do it, and then nobody worries about it. You know,
no, it's like that's right.
Because otherwise you'd have anxiety.
Did I do it?
Exactly. Yeah, we don't want that. For those of you who've never seen Avenue Q before, pretty amazing musical with puppets. You're musically directing it. Tell us about it musically. Is it challenging? Is it
musically? It's amazingly smart. Mm. And I've seen the show a number of times. I saw it in London first, and I was late to the theatre. You know those moments where you go, I've got to get there on time. And you end up walking 5 minutes late.
Mm.
And there was a small lockout, and I walked into the theatre, and you know that feeling of the whole audience were in hysterics. Like, I've never walked into a theatre before and had just experienced how much people were laughing at this show straight away. You know, normally it takes a little while for the audience to warm up.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because the show's, it's dirty puppets, you know. It's very much inspired by the South Park guys.
Sort of harking back to the Meet the Feeble days of
Peter Jackson. It's not quite as dirty as Meet the Feebles.
I was going to say,
anyone out there who knows what I'm talking about, you're a sick puppy.
Oh, come on. It's a great movie. Did you notice there was a kid show in Australia...
Oh, no.
Only about 10 years ago, and I swear they used the same puppets.
Wow.
I swear they used the Meet the Feebles puppets, and they were advertising
it.
I think it was called the Ferals. And how wrong is that? Because the grown-ups are going, hang on, that bunny.
Oh, I've seen that bunny do some
bad stuff. We know
what
that bunny's done.
Yeah, exactly.
So Avenue Q, back on topic. Musically, what I'm realising more and more as I work on it is it's actually... very, very clever. I always knew it was clever, but a lot of the songs have that feeling of Sesame Street to them.
Who wrote it?
The music's by Bobby Lopez, the guy that actually wrote Book of Mormon as well.
Ah, okay.
And he and his wife/sister. I'm only saying that not because he's married to his sister, just because I'm not sure. They have the same surname.
Oh, that's
and I
confusing.
Don't know whether they're married or...
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've just accused him of being... married to his sister, which is
Mormon.
He's definitely not.
His artistic types can be flamboyant.
That's right. Anything can happen.
A woman who has his surname.
And they also wrote Frozen.
Oh,
so musically,
wow,
they're very, very smart. Mm. And I mean, I spend a lot of time working in music theatre history as well. I teach at VCA in music theatre history, and when you talk about Book of Mormon, the show's an amazing parody of everything, and is in some ways, when it won the Tony, a lot of people went, you know, it is in some ways the perfect musical because it's written so intelligently. The South Park guys do exactly the same. They study their subject matter to within an inch of its life.
Piss take of the genre itself.
Mm. Yeah, but it's a perfect piss take by using the right elements. So it has the I Want song, and it has the Happy Village song, and it has the Dream Ballet and all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But looking at Avenue Q, most of that, I think, has come from Bobby Lopez because all that stuff's in this show too.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm realising more and more about the score as we go. We had our first band rehearsal on Thursday and I'm playing the song What Do You Do With a BA in English, which is the opening number. What a great number.
What do you do with a BA in English? And
still trying
to figure it out. It's still an important question.
And I realised that musically it's the Rainbow Connection.
Ah, great.
And I've been playing the song in rehearsals for 2 weeks and have known the song for years and years, and I'm playing it just going, oh!
This is good, yeah.
It connects directly to... immediate references. So musically, it's really, really rewarding. And we've got an amazing cast that just are singing like a dream. So
right, yeah. But it
exciting.
Has a particularly short season. So those of you who
only
want
2 weeks.
Get in there and
so
book your tickets.
We open August the 3rd and close August 14.
That is very short.
Look, there might be. Just keep your eyes peeled. Keep
very
your
good.
Eyes peeled.
Exciting. Are you travelling with it, or are you...
No,
is
it's
it just
Melbourne.
Just a little
just
blip
in Melbourne.
In the theatre landscape.
Yeah,
very
the...
Nice.
The producer rang the theatre about a different project and said, do you have availability at Christmas? And they said, no. We've got Kinky Boots in. It's running forever.
Oh, I can imagine.
But we've got this weird 3-week window that the theatre's available in August. Are you interested in doing something in there? We can, work with you on this? And he went, yeah, all right, let's do Avenue Q, because that's not very complex.
Yes. Yeah. We'll just whip that up.
Yeah, you know, get all the puppets, teach the actors how to use the puppets, build a set. It's amazing.
It's incredible.
There's no in terms of casting, they're not looking for people with previous puppetry experience. They're just looking for just good singers
it
and dancers.
Look, it was a question that we asked when people came into audition, have you had previous puppetry experience?
Yeah.
Often the answer is no, because unless they've done
been
kids
a
shows.
Span or somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, Perth has... a puppet company that do amazing things that I can't remember the name.
Melbourne's got Polyglot,
yeah. Mm. But
Warhorse.
And of course there's all of those, Warhorse. And then there's all the kids shows like Peppa Pig and all that sort of stuff that are touring. So we did have a lot of people that had some puppetry experience.
Mm.
A couple of people actually came in with their own Avenue Q puppets that they'd made themselves as hobbies.
Oh, strange.
No, it was actually kind of lovely. It's like you're so connected to the show.
Did any of them get the role?
No.
No.
But we ended up going for, it was the voices actually that it really came down to, because... Mm. Those Sesame Street voices are so iconic.
Yes, yeah.
They have to sound like Cookie Monster. They have to sound like Bert and Ernie, just so that those references make sense.
And because they're deeply embedded in a childhood memory, it's more important.
They're wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw a production of Wizard of Oz, a school production of Wizard of Oz during the week, which was 3 hours long.
Great.
But aside from the 3 hours, what was very interesting was to see those actors who had chosen to kind of walk away from that film text, which is so iconic for a lot of people of a certain age. You know, it's so embedded in your memory, that Wizard of Oz film. They were probably less successful than the actors that chose to just do it their own way.
Yeah.
You know, just reinvent the Scarecrow or reinvent the Tin Man.
And yet I think
better
at
option.
The same time. Yeah, true. Because the audience...
Well, if you're not going to be able to do it exactly...
The audience is so connected
to
can't, that.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right.
Yeah, if you don't
and
have the funds and the...
For
yeah.
a remount of any show, you've got to bring something new to it. Because otherwise...
absolutely.
Especially a movie. How many times have you kind of gone, I could just sit at home and watch the movie of this? What are you doing for me that's new?
And theatrically, how do you do that storm on stage when you don't have much money and you don't know?
Exactly.
How do you do it successfully? Well, you don't pretend you're going to do it.
You know,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
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 You rely wholly and solely on the music to create that mood of the storm and a few lights, you know.
That's right. That's right. And people going,
yeah.
In the background.
We had a very loud smoke machine working overtime during that scene. Yeah, it was good.
I think it's interesting with those, you say you've got to go with the voices in that show, because when you don't have any of the non-verbals and you're working with a puppet that has its own set features, you can't, all the personality has to come
from the voice. And of course for a lot of the characters in the show, most of the puppeteer characters are actually playing two roles. Kate Monster and Lucy the Slut. What a great character name, Lucy the Slut.
You already want to see this show.
Kate Monster and Lucy the Slut are played and voiced by the same person.
Okay.
And there are amazing moments where, so it's being played by Sophie Wright, who's a beautiful performer, who's also going to be in Kinky Boots. So she's pretty much just going to move into the theatre forever.
Right, okay. Her Majesty's
we
is
got
her place.
First. Yeah. She's ours first.
Just a warm-up.
She has to have conversations with herself.
Wow.
In the two different voices, you know. Oh, yeah. I'm Kate Monster. Yeah, I'm Lucy the Slut. You know,
Is
that written into the script?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so Rod and Princeton are the same actor. The Trekkie Monster, which is the Cookie Monster.
The internet is for porn.
That's him. And Nikki are the same actor.
Yeah.
And we were talking about it the other day, actually, in rehearsals. In some ways, it's really interesting because... the two characters that each person plays are direct contrasts of each other.
Mm.
And yet, in their resolution as characters later in the show, they take a step closer to one another.
Yeah.
So Lucy the Slut reforms and, you know, discovers Jesus and he gives her virginity back. of course, as Jesus does.
Yeah. Here is your hymen.
Definitely can. They take this little step into one another. It's really interesting.
That's a shit gift. It's like, you know, that thing that you've been enjoying all this time. It's going to hurt again now.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Lord. But it is, that is an interesting thing, because I think when you remove all the other expressive skills and you just focus on one for an actor, you do see where their talent is, know, absolutely, yeah, you know. Absolutely. It's like when you remove everything and you just say it's all about your voice now, you see who can do it and who can't very quickly. Yep. It actually makes casting easier in a way, because you know if they've got that capacity or not very quickly, and it's very difficult to teach, I reckon.
Yeah.
You've either got the variety or you don't, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Interestingly, the puppet stuff, we got an American guy named Kevin out. He's worked on the Avenue Q all around the US. He came out and ran puppet camp with our actors after they'd been cast. The puppet stuff people have learnt and have worked amazingly on, and just seeing how expressive they're being with these puppets. You know, just basic things like the fact that, and, you know, stuff that I would never think of, the puppet has to breathe. If if you're going to sing with the puppet has to actually move as though he's breathing.
Yeah.
And as a conductor, it's great for me to watch, because I can immediately see when the singer's about to sing.
Yeah.
Because it's like the puppet is conducting me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really cool. All these little elements you never think in rehearsals. Yesterday, our director kind of said to one of the actors, just make sure when you're not involved in the dialogue that you keep the puppet moving slightly so that you keep it alive. Because if second the puppet sits still, you worry that it's dead. It loses that sort of suspension of disbelief that this is a living, breathing object that happens to be attached to someone's hand.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. And in War Horse, to bring back to that was a great show. And
one of the production companies in, I read this week, one of the production companies in the UK is selling off their set of Warhorse puppets. I want the chicken.
Because I heard
that. Yeah, I love that.
The chicken was so cool.
I like the goose.
The goose. Yeah.
With a little flap.
Sorry.
They had some...
I just cut you off totally.
They set it up with some African kids or something. They set up a workshop, so they are employing guys from Africa to make puppets. There was a really good backstory to that as well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, in that documentary, I think I seem to remember that, yeah.
But the best bits about War Horse that made you believe it was, that just the horse breathing, the ears twitching to noises, the eye flicking a fly off. Just the those constant little
stuff. And as an audience member, it's incredible how quickly you stop watching the puppeteer.
Yeah.
You know, you still get that sense of... There's a great interview with Julie Taymor, who directed Lion King. When she came up with the idea of the puppets and the headdresses and things like that. You know, can an audience watch the puppets and watch the actor and take in all of that information at once? And she just turns and says, yes, they can.
Yeah.
Let's not treat our audiences like they're dumb.
Yeah. But also I think it's that thing, and I say this because, you know, I'm dealing with young actors a lot because I'm a drama teacher, but I say this often, you have to believe that the audience will go with you.
That's right.
And if you commit, they will commit with you. Right. It's a contract. I sit down, I've bought my ticket, I sit down, I want to watch something that will move me. I want to be engaged. So you just take me with you and I will go. But if you give me any moment where I think, you don't believe this, why would I believe it with you? You know what I mean? Why would I buy in? Yeah. And so it is those little things, that little movement or that little, the micro that makes a big difference.
It's the tiny stuff about head angle to make sure that the audience can see the puppet's eyes all the time.
Yeah.
The fact that the eye line, when a because there are human characters, that sounds terrible, doesn't it? But there are people that aren't puppeteers in the show as well. When they're having a conversation with the puppet, they have to talk to the puppet, not to the puppeteer.
Yeah.
The puppeteer can't look at their puppet. The puppeteer has to look at who they're talking to and be the eye line. It's just all these tiny things that, of course, it's all come from the Jim Henson sort of style of puppeteering.
This is genius. It's what I love about puppetry and also about animation is that I always use it as an example, the movie Grease, because I'm a huge fan of Grease. But when I watch it, there's so many scenes that you're like, what's actually meant to happen there? Like, there's a lot of ambiguity because people are just being cool or whatever. With animation or with puppetry, everything's so deliberate. It's like when somebody tilts their head, it's for a reason.
Yep.
When somebody blinks, when somebody breathes, every every one of those things, it's not like, let's go to the stock breath movement. It's how are they going to breathe here? Yeah.
But isn't that also true of a really great actor?
Yeah.
For sure.
Everything in a really great actor is in the detail. Mm. And you watch anything Meryl Streep's ever done. You know, you watch every move. While it's not almost necessarily like it's in her planned,
fingernail. That's it's right. like, it's incredible. Yeah, yeah, the detail.
She hasn't necessarily gone through and planned, I'm going to do exactly this at this moment. But it's so driven by the text and the emotion behind it and it's a really interesting thing.
But even as a human, like when you're, you know, when you're acting nervous, I mean, you're not acting nervous, you just are nervous.
Yeah.
But we're all nervous in different ways. Like some people pick their nails, some people fucking play with it, you know, whatever. There's an ambiguity in it because, I don't know, like, are they doing that because they're itchy or are they doing it because they're nervous or whatever?
And it's also what we buy as genuine in an actor, you know, like, so you have to find that spectrum of, you know, what's, because, you know, it's like when you say to a year eight kid, okay, be old, and, you know, be 36, and suddenly you're like, 36 and 80 look remarkably the same. Yeah. You know, like you're just bending over with a walking stick here.
But that's also for kids. You ask how old are you, and for them there's not a big difference between 36 and 80. It's like, it's true.
Thanks, asshole.
It's pitching it right. You know, it's pitching age correctly. Yeah. That's the challenge, you know. How do you get that so that I buy that's your age, not that you're playing that age?
There's
this
great scene we've been rehearsing this week, which is, you know, all those little mannerisms. And one of the things our actress playing Kate Monster found is Kate gets drunk at one point. You know, at the moment where they're out on their date, they get drunk on Long Island iced teas because the bad idea bears tell them to drink, do drinking games and drink faster. The show is so funny.
Great show.
And she just found this beautiful thing, and it was quite accidental. She put her head down, like, you know, like my head, you know, that I'm drunk, my head's really heavy.
Yeah.
And the puppet's hair fell. So, of course, she then put her hair out of the eyes, and then the hair fell again, and it just became that repeated drunk gesture. And as soon as you see this puppet rubbing her hair out of her eyes constantly, you just see how drunk she is.
You're very drunk. Yeah, exactly.
But it's not staggering drunk acting that everyone hates. It's, so many beautiful little things.
Mm. I think it's the thing about great actors that's common across all of them is stillness. Like a Kevin Spacey, apart from what he's actively doing at that moment to do something, the rest is perfectly still, so that there's no second guessing.
Yeah, you don't get you don't get a double message. Exactly. It's a very clear message,
And it's it's those clear decisions about what's going to happen next and why.
Yeah.
And it takes a stillness of person to be able to actually stop themselves doing all the other things that just happen.
Especially because in front of an audience. You know, in front of an audience you want to be doing.
Yeah,
but it's that action of not doing it's actually more powerful. I saw a Fun Home on Broadway last year, which won the Tony Award, and it's the first first lesbian story, or with a central leading character as a lesbian. There's an actor in it named Beth Malone, and she sort of narrates it. There's actually three different versions of her character at different stages in her life, all on stage at the same time. It's an amazingly constructed show. But it's in Circle in the Square Theatre, so it's in the round, so you're right on top of the actors.
Mm.
But watching her listening, you know, she's always on stage, watching these scenes unfold with the young version of her and her father, but watching the older version listen was some of the most extraordinary acting I've seen, because it is that stillness that you're talking about and that focus, but also the little reactions of, God, I wish I hadn't said that. Or like you're watching yourself back on video.
The cringiness of it.
Just that slight, no. That means so much more now. I know what happened to my dad and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah.
Incredible, incredible acting. Mm. Yeah. It is possible in musicals, who knew?
Yeah. Trevor, I'd like to ask you because obviously you're at the VCA and you're teaching your history of musical theatre.
Nerdy. Yep. I love it.
Well, you know, we're young, aspiring musical theatre people. What do you think that there's What do you think of the scene here in Melbourne in terms of musical theatre? What do you think we need to sort of build this scene here? Because I think it's...
I think we need to spend a lot more money and time on our own musical theatre voice.
Mm.
And there's some really, really great movements coming forward. An organisation called Homegrown that are developing new Australian musicals.
Yeah.
And encouraging composers and writers and all that sort of stuff. But it's got to get to the point where one of the big... producers will actually step up and go, I'm and producing an Australian musical that's not a jukebox show, that's not Boy from Oz, it's not Priscilla.
Yeah.
There's an awesome movement at the moment. Like, I saw Matilda the other night, Wednesday night.
How great is it?
Fantastic. Oh, fabulous. Fantastic show.
I can't believe how schmick that show was. Like, it was just so clean. Oh, my God, amazing.
So you got Matilda, and the last music theatre show I probably saw was the latest Les Mis that came out.
Yeah.
And what's... really similar between the two of them is that Marina Pryor, fucking Anthony Waller, there's none of those big names, or Bert Newton, the names that seem you need to have to sell a musical were absent, and it was just content. Yeah, it was content, and it was good quality. I mean,
and highly theatrical.
Yeah.
You know, like really good quality production values, like the stagecraft and speaks through the roof.
And speaks to lots of different levels. Kids can go in and enjoy it and love it just because of the kids in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Adults go in and love it. Yeah. But Cats was the same. You know, as much as we denigrate Cats as being a ridiculous show with no plot about, you know, cats fighting over who gets to go to Kitty Cat.
Cats.
Did you?
Well, you know, but I went and saw it when I was probably 8 years old, which is why I loved Cats. And I loved
the recording of it, because it was really the first time we heard those kind of synthesizers.
Absolutely. And, you know, and for me as a kid seeing Cats, that breaking the fourth wall and coming out into the audience was the most exciting thing. I nearly wet myself when a cat came near me. I was so excited. Like, there was a highly pantomime element to it now, I realise, as an older person, you know, probably that I wouldn't have appreciated as an adult. But
it works on so many different levels.
But it was, as a you know, young person looking at a piece of theatre, that was seriously exciting.
A kid sees Cats and goes, oh, the kitty cats are amazing, and they're in the audience.
Exactly.
An adult sees Cats and sees the social commentary of it, sees how we treat old people, like Gus the theatre cat.
Yeah, absolutely,
sees how we treat homeless people, like Isabella. Mm. And, you know, it's interesting that it works on so many levels, but we still look at it as, oh, it's just Cats, you know.
Yeah, Well, but I also, you know, as a kid, loved Starlight Express, but that's not a musical that I would ever go back and look at again.
Trains on roller skates. And they updated it to be Trains on Rollerblades.
Yeah, exactly.
You are the Starlight. No, I'm not. I'm a train. I'm a person pretending to be a train on rollerblades.
In Lycra.
In Lycra.
It was written these days.
Fluoro Lycra.
There was a lot of green Lycra. I remember that much.
Bring it back. Rod Laver Arena in a whack
load of green Lycra. Yeah.
I'm up for it. I'm going to learn how to roller skate just for that.
It'd be on rollerblades these days, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But I mean, just in terms of that, like, whole, like, because I guess my musical theatre knowledge is, you know, way less thorough than my knowledge of playwriting, playwriting.
Yeah.
Is it the same sort of issue that they have with playwrights in Australia, where they don't get given enough time and money to actually develop the script so that it is
that development thing at is a so good tricky.
Place when it gets produced, you know, at the point it needs to be at, rather than, you know, sort of half-baked.
And it's so tricky. I worked on a new Australian musical at the beginning of last year called Sexercise the Musical.
Mm-hmm.
It was exactly what it set out to be. It was Sexercise the Musical. And I mean, in lots of ways, I'm really, really proud of the work that I did on that. It didn't. It only ran a couple of weeks, and they were hoping for much longer runs and more success. But that development process is so pivotal. And you look at how new shows in New York are produced. You know, Lin-Manuel Miranda started writing Hamilton. I have a clip of him performing the opening number at the White House in like 2010.
Yeah,
and it took five years before I got anywhere near Broadway, of constant work and constant rewrites and support. And that's what, I mean, that's what Homegrown is starting to do now.
Yeah.
Which is great. We only did one workshop of Sexercise. I wish we'd done four.
Yeah.
Because it's about seeing how audiences react to things. Yeah. But we don't have a big enough market to take those risks sometimes.
So what do you?
And the other thing I think we need to do is actually, and this is why I'm really happy to be involved with this Avenue Q, is step up and do our own productions. Well, I think the Australian audience, and it's all Cameron McIntosh's fault, as much as he did genius things for the theatre by making them a global brand, so that when you saw Cats or Les Mis, it was the same in every city. But for our actors to develop the chance to build their own roles, they need to be able to do their version of it. And that happened back in the 60s with when we started casting Jill Perryman as Funny Girl and all that sort of stuff. But then it went back to the Cameron McIntosh model of, no, it's got to be exactly
the same.
The costumes the same, the sets the same, the lighting's the same, the actors are replicas of what Patti LuPone did on Broadway. So we've got to start doing our own productions. The Australian production of Hairspray, I thought, was so exciting because it was an entirely new production, so different from Broadway, and it was great.
And it was great. It was great energy. It was amazing. It was fun. Yeah. Really good fun, that show.
Really fun.
I just couldn't imagine, after doing music theatre for a while, only on an amateur sort of scale, but, you know, doing it for a while, what made me leave was exactly that. Like, I was sick of doing other people's ideas. I wanted to do something original. And I've sung covers and done, you know, a cappella covers and stuff. But you get to choose the songs, you get to choose the how you want to stage it, how do you arrange it.
Yeah, that's right. That's
really important.
You're not just a cookie cutter. And so, the star casting thing that you bring up is an interesting thing too, I think. Look, it's a double-sided.
You're trying to make money. Yeah. I mean, you guys are talking about people being paid to develop, which we'll get back to that. But, like, the money's got to come from somewhere.
That's
And, you know, in our scene, we don't have a big enough audience base in any of our cities, and it's too far between cities. So,
and there's no commercial payoff in a workshop.
Yeah.
There's none.
Exactly.
There's nothing. Yeah.
Who fits that bill? Mm. You know, is it Arts Victoria or is it...
I think some of it... And Ladies in Black is a beautiful example, actually, the show Tim Finn...
Which I couldn't even get a ticket to.
Yeah,
so
Melbourne
Theatre
Company
and
Queensland Theatre Company co-produced it. Mm. I think those theatre companies have the potential to do really interesting things, and they have. You know, the Sydney Theatre Company did Spring Awakening 10, 12 years ago now. Melbourne Theatre Company does musicals sporadically, and when they do, they are always really interesting and done very well. So I think that kind of organisation can, but I think commercial producers have to step up too and realise that it's good for their industry.
This is a bit naive, but you know, like in New York and London, there's a bit of a tradition or a culture of philanthropy of the arts.
Yes,
you know, and we're not good at promoting that idea. Really, I know that visual art sales have gone up because in Australia, because I know that a lot of investment bankers have talked about art being a good investment, but there doesn't seem to be anybody talking about it being a good investment.
Well, theatre's a terrifying investment.
It is.
For anyone, it's a very high-risk investment.
It is, yeah.
I went to... just looking at my name.
You've got the name badge right there.
I went to the opening of Studio 5, which is part of the Melbourne University's Melbourne Graduate School of Education.
Right.
They've opened this floor, this whole floor in the building in the
Grattan
city.
On Grattan Street there?
Not or in Grattan,
Queensbury
along Street.
Queensbury, yep.
And this, it's a new arts centre, and it's split into sort of quadrants, but it's very open plan. There's no set rooms or anything, but there's you know, the music area just has these little silent studios, so you can have six bands all playing at once with headphones.
Wow.
Cool.
But it all morphs into, you know, like these big cupboards that are soundproof, sort of, you know, like baffles, but they open up, and inside you've got your headphones and all the things you plug into.
Mm. Oh, wow.
You've got a drama studio, a little black box area, then there's some seating folds out. You've got a visual art space, but it's all open.
Yeah.
And they played us, you know, we were there to have a bit of a think tank about the state of arts education in Australia and how a space like this could interact. And they played this video from Paul Keating back in not too long ago, and he was talking about the importance...
When he was Prime Minister?
No, long after,
close,
actually.
Yeah.
He was talking about the importance of the arts, and he was saying, you know, for him as a politician... going home and actually stopping everything, not working for a minute and putting on a concerto and just sitting and being with art and the things that it inspired in him, the ideas that inspired in him that would create his next speech and his next policy and whatever.
Mm. Yeah, wow.
It's been since him. I mean, we haven't had a politician since him who's actually been standing up saying, like, who understands that, who understands that being with art and being letting art
is a gift.
Get into you and actually having quiet time, not... You know, there's a great thing about art where you go out and you stand in a pub and you know, you get drunk and you laugh with your friends or whatever, but there's part of art that's just a really personal exchange between someone. They might have been recorded, you know, a long, long time ago, but there's something about it that inspires something.
Yeah, totally. I think the political side of it's a really interesting one. I mean, of course,
especially in this climate.
I found it really interesting. This is the first election I've encountered in a long time where I've been very aware of the arts policies of the major parties, except for the Liberal Party. The Labor Party launched their arts policy.
Yeah.
The Greens launched a very strong arts policy. It was fascinating that was on the political agenda, mostly as a backlash to the Brandis things.
Yeah.
And look, to be honest, I probably should be much more informed about all of that, but I don't work in an organisation that is heavily affected by that. Apart from the education side of things through VCA, but there's education funding, which is different.
Although I do think, I think from the little bit that I do know, I think it's very clear that the issue with politicians getting to decide where the funding goes is that their own bias in terms of art forms becomes, you know, it heavily weights and
but so would yours.
At the same point, I don't think the Australia Council. I think the Australia Council probably had its own biases as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Always. You're probably
I think
right,
any
yeah.
funding body is going to have its own biases, and we need to accept that's a reality.
It has to.
It has to.
It has
because
to. It has
of
to
the
have
people
an
it brings onto its board, and they try to be as diverse as possible, and that's a really great thing.
Mm.
But I think your point about philanthropy is actually really important too. I think encouraging. There's Creative Victoria actually have a lot of really interesting. Funding opportunities for artists where you can double your funding. So Creative Victoria will chip in just as much as you raise from the public.
WA did a thing for theater, for movies where they would match one for one.
Yeah, funding matching. And I think that sort of thing is really interesting. Of course, Possible and all of that sort of online funding is such a big thing now that people are encouraged to be philanthropists in a way. But then there's a heavy reliance on that. And sometimes I'm going to say something really controversial that I'll probably get in trouble for. I know. Sometimes I think artists need to be responsible for their own funding. You know, it's hard. It's really hard.
No one's ever paid me shit to write a song.
Yeah.
You know, and I've written heaps of them. And, you know, they might not be the best songs in the world. But, like, the times when I have been paid... And I have. I've got a contract at the moment. I'm doing some work for Men's Health. But the fact that there's funding there doesn't
change your need.
It doesn't
to
motivate
songs.
Me to do it more or less. Like the inspiration comes when it comes, and I'm either dedicated to finishing it or I'm not.
Yeah.
So we do need to be paid for our work. I'm not saying that in any way, shape, or you know, we have to be paid for our work. But
also have to be prepared to put your money where your mouth is. Is that kind of what you're saying? A bit?
Yeah.
But what's work?
I'm being wishy-washy about it, and I'm okay with that.
Like in arts, I get it. People should be paid for what they want to do. But a lot of arts is explorative, and a lot of the time you're doing stuff just because you want to do it.
That's right.
And I don't feel like I need to be paid for that. I feel like I did that. And, you know, when I look around this room at all the shit that I've bought, I don't feel like someone else should have bought that for me. You know, I feel good that I've been paid enough money that I can justify those expenses now.
But then at the same time, I think you and I, all of us really, are all quite fortunate that we're able to have other careers as well. I am fortunate... In some ways, you know, I thank my parents constantly for them forcing me to get an education degree.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I didn't want to at the time, but, you know, it meant that I was able to live very comfortably and develop my craft as a conductor and a musical director and all that sort of stuff.
Do you think teaching's made you better at it too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I think I would... I mean, I don't know because I haven't tested this theory, but I think I would be a much better performer now.
Yep.
because I've taught,
yep.
I think I would be much more generous yeah. as a performer.
And it gives you, because in the classroom you have to be able to speak to so many different ability levels and backgrounds and have to be able to deliver your message in so many different ways that as a performer, that ability to read the room, I mean, most of the performing stuff I do now is piano bar work other than musical direction, you know, but just sitting in a room and trying to sense what people want to hear and what's going to keep the party flowing.
They want to hear you, Trevor.
Yeah. But they also, you know, like you can kind of play with, is this an 80s crowd? Is this a 60s crowd? Yeah. Is this a 90s crowd?
I got to jump in and say, like, Trevor Jones is like Mr. fucking piano bar cabaret in Melbourne. Like, whenever you do anything to do with cabaret, he's the guy who, you know, he's the guy who he's introduces always there. You.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you are the guy who knows exactly what. I remember you playing... last time I was in a room with you and playing Believe It or Not, I'm Walking on It.
That song kills
it.
Everywhere.
Theme from the Greatest best. American
Absolutely.
Superhero.
Yeah. Like, fantastic.
No one else plays that song.
And, so if you want to go out and hear that song,
you know where I realised how
great... Go to the Butterfly Club on a
Friday
night.
Every Friday.
Trevor's Fab Fridays.
Fab Fridays, that's it.
Absolutely, ButterflyClub.
It's free.
.com.
It's free, believe it or not.
.com.
Okay, butterflyclub.com.
Or just turn up.
Yeah.
We'll put that on the website. We'll have some links and shit.
That song, you know where I first realised how much that song kills? And, it, you know, you store it away in your head?
Yeah.
Was at Club Retro in Lonsdale Street.
Right.
You know that?
Yeah.
I just remember it coming on and just seeing that. And never thought this song, this is something I should play in piano bars. Just seeing the whole room go, yeah!
Yeah, exactly.
And it does every time you play it. It's incredible.
The last time I was at Retro Nightclub was many, many moons ago. And
it was when the modern hits that they're playing, it was when the hits they're playing now were actually on the radio.
Yeah, were hits.
I remember vomiting out my nose at Retro Nightclub. Oh. Running down the corridor, trying to get to the bathroom unsuccessfully.
Oh no.
Good times.
Good thing is it's probably still on the wall somewhere. You know.
Just becomes part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's certain ambience. Yeah.
Now, look, we talked a little bit with Luke Howard about, and it was funny for Luke because Luke's a bit of a musical genius kind of character, and for him, you know, we're talking about moments in music that just define for you like that experience, like those transcendental moments where you're like, fuck, I am part of a moment now that really defined you.
Those moments of connection with an audience too, where you really feel that the music is speaking to them and you're speaking with it.
Whether it's from being a performer or being in the audience, like we all have these moments that, you know, music is just something that just about everyone in the world. I remember going to a school reunion and catching up with an old friend and, you know, being... most people ask, oh, what do you do? Oh, I'm a musician. Oh, that's awesome. I love music. That's what you generally get.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this person was like, oh, yeah, never really cared much for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was actually an ex of mine. It was hilarious. And I was like, so what, you don't listen to the radio? No, kind of bugs me. Like, so you have a dinner party, you don't have anything on the background? No, I prefer to, no.
Far out.
And I was like, right, well, good to see you.
Person,
I'm going to go over
here. Does this person have dinner parties? Like, it just strikes me that that's sort of seemingly fundamentally antisocial if you don't like
it.
Do you know what I mean?
I've never heard of it. Like, you get on a tram now and everyone's got headphones in.
Yeah,
all listening to their own music.
Yeah, music or podcast.
What's she listening to?
Yeah,
that's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Like, if she had headphones in on the tram... Would they be noise cancelling headphones?
Oh. Just silent.
Yeah.
Or just white noise. Yeah. Just nothing. Yeah.
It just goes.
Strange.
I couldn't believe it. Anyway, so I'll get back to my point, which was, what's that for you? Like we've shared some stuff. We met many, many years ago in the Vocal Consort part of the Australian Boys Choral Institute.
When we were both very serious choral singers.
I don't remember being particularly serious about it, but
I was so serious.
You were very, very good at what you did, and I appreciated that. I was the guy who didn't really turn out much, but what's that for you? Like, what are those moments? Do you have a moment in your mind that just defines that experience for you?
There's probably quite a few. I mean, musical theatre wise, I have a number of them. Mum tells the story constantly of being in. I was in year 8, year 7. and we went and saw the school production of Pirates of Penzance. Brilliant. And at the end, and I look back at the cast, like I was pretty lucky. The guy that played Frederick is now doing lead roles on the West End.
Oh wow, okay.
You know, he's doing pretty well.
So you're actually looking at the guy that
played
cast.
Samuel, which is not a big role. Mm. He went on to be a principal with Opera Australia. You know,
this in Perth?
No, actually, I lived in Melbourne for 3 years as a kid, which was my initial connection to the Australian Boys Choir.
Gotcha.
So I was in the Boys Choir as a kid, and then we moved back to Perth. So it was actually at Whitefriars College.
Yeah, right.
I turned to Mum at the end of it, and I said, I'm going to do that when I grow up. So I...
Bugger.
Yeah. And she's like, no, you're not. So I think that's probably... part of it, but also very fond memories of always going to see musicals with Mum growing up.
Had she always been a musical fan? Like,
yes.
Right.
So she had the records, and mm-hmm. Pirates of Penzance was actually, nerdily, you know, one of my favourites growing up.
Mm.
What 10-year-old...
is into Pirates of Penzance?
Grade 5. I sat, you know, when schools would make you write a journal... and you'd have 10 minutes worth of uninterrupted writing time. There was the reading time. There was the USSR, the uninterrupted sustained silent reading.
Oh.
I know, right? The USSR.
And Trevor's just went, hey, nonny, nonny, fa-la-la, tra-la-la.
And we now have
drop everything and read. I like that. That's better than USSR.
Mm.
Because, you know, I grew up in the 80s. This was in the 80s. The USSR was the whole Cold War.
It's evil.
Yeah, that's
the worst thing in the world.
Bring down the curtain. They were really good, reading.
Really good at gymnastics, but, you know, I probably don't talk about that this week with the Olympics.
Exactly,
Russian athletes. But
so nothing's changed, essentially.
Well, yeah, that's right. But grade 5, we had to write a journal, and I'm a boy. I'm a very much a boy, and I was never into the journal writing thing ever. And so what I chose to do is I had the libretto of Pirates of Penzance from going to see it, John English, Simon Gallagher, Marina Pryor one
at
the
Perth Entertainment Centre
that's gone now.
Yep.
And I just wrote out the libretto as my journal.
From memory?
As a 10-year-old.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's why I didn't have any friends.
Mm.
But like that copying thing, you must have really not wanted to write.
No, I really didn't. I didn't want to write about my feelings and stuff.
No.
just wanted to sing the show tune.
Yeah, exactly. That was my feelings.
Yeah, there was a big gesture associated with that, and it's a shame this isn't video. if you're thinking Hills Are Alive with the Sound of Music, that's pretty much correct. What I just did in the room.
Exactly.
Just want to sing the show tune. I think the other time, other sorts of things are times, and this it sometimes feels really arrogant to say, but it's something we're not very good at. Artists aren't very good at acknowledging when they're really good at something, you know, and celebrating successes.
Yeah. We were actually talking about this in the last podcast, you know, that thing of branding, like understanding that you are a brand and promoting that, actually just going away and self-promoting.
And Americans seem so much better at it than Australians. They're probably not. They probably feel just as insecure as all the rest of us and that we're all pretending. Mm. But they seem much better at saying,
their culture permits I'm really it a bit good more. At this. Yeah, yeah.
I was talking to a friend recently. You know, we were talking about a whole lot of stuff going on. I was talking about struggling with ambition, that idea of... when does ambition stop in the kind of field that we're in? When do we hit a point where we say, I've achieved all the things that I want to do? Is that when I've conducted La Boheme at the Met? Or is that, you know, just this week when I'm working on a show that I'm really enjoying? Where does ambition stop? And she talked about, she works in business. She's not an artist at all. Well, she is, but it's not her field. But business-wise, and she was talking about, you know, people have vision boards and vision walls and things like that. She said, no, for people like you... you need a celebration board. You need to put things up to remind yourself of the successes.
The good stuff you've already done, yeah.
A moment, and someone recently asked me, we were having a drink after rehearsals the other day, and one of the actors said, you know, so what's your favourite show to have been involved in? And I talked about, and I am slowly answering your question.
Mm.
I'm getting there, but I conducted La Traviata, because I conduct opera too. That's just weird. But, you know, music theatre and opera and cabaret and all sorts. That's right.
Mm.
I conducted La Traviata in for the City of Stonington in their Opera in the Park concert about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. 4,000 people. Amazing. Wow. We had a beautiful cast, beautiful small orchestra.
It's a beautiful opera.
Central Park?
In Victoria Gardens.
Beautiful, yeah.
Paran?
Yep.
Yeah. It's a stunning opera that I've loved forever, and it was on my tick list of operas to conduct, so I've almost ticked all of them, which is nice. Don Giovanni, La
What's
Boheme.
What's your favourite?
You can't ask that. I don't have. They're like my children. I don't have favourites.
Okay.
Amongst my favourites.
Yes.
I think Don Giovanni Mozart is probably my favourite opera.
Okay.
Which I've conducted. But this concert of Traviata, I'd actually just come off working on a cruise ship. I'd spent 6 weeks working on a cruise ship in the South Pacific doing piano bar work, so 4 hours a night of rock and roll. But it meant that I had my entire daytime to study the score of Traviata. And never before have I felt so prepared going into a rehearsal period, because I'd had the luxury of that time. So it meant that I got into day one of rehearsals knowing the score backwards and knowing exactly how I want it to be, which is your ideal situation and what you should be doing and what you always aim for, but real life gets in the way. But just that feeling of conducting that for 4,000 people in a beautiful outdoor setting, knowing it was exactly how I wanted it to go, I think is one of those moments for me of acknowledging that when you do the work, you're good at what you do.
So just to ask, because I've never put in the work.
That is a lie.
No, I've put in lots of work.
I've seen all the work you've put into the technology side of Suede.
I've put in tons of work on everything, but I have never walked into any performance feeling prepared enough for anything. In my head, I just believe that it doesn't matter how much you prepare, you'll never feel right and you should just be in the moment. But did you feel prepared enough? Like, were you like, I fucking got this.
I know this score. I know this score.
I'm
going to
make a note of that.
I know
prepare,
where it's going.
Because it works. Yeah.
And look, there's always nerves and there's always something could go wrong and maybe I don't and self-doubt and blah, 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 blah. And
but it's true. I have the same thing when I'm directing a show. If I know that scene backwards and I know what I want it to look like, everything runs much more smoothly because I can keep it in my head. Whereas if I go in and I sort of have half an idea, there's just the little bit of impro is often means that the end product isn't quite what I wanted.
Yeah, but
it'll
and
be
at the
close
same time,
to
it doesn't
what I
mean
want.
You walk into the room knowing everything.
No, of course not.
Everything's not fixed, so that when an actor goes, how about this? You go, oh, that's really cool. Yeah. So it shapes it, but you've got a core.
You've got a core vision.
A core vision. Mm. That's exactly right. And that was how I felt with this production of Traviata, is that musically, I knew exactly what I wanted to say. Mm. And it meant, orchestras are funny beasts to deal with because they're all incredible musicians that's like a chorus line, they're incredible musicians that have spent all their lives training to be the most amazing soloist, and they end up playing eighth desk of the second violins, playing Chike 5 again. But they're all amazing trained musicians, and so they challenge you. It's like, but what about this? And it was one of the first times in my conducting career I had a clear answer for everything, when they went, but what about this? It's like, no, this is what I want.
See, I just have an amazing ability to bullshit
in
any
situation. Don't we all?
Oh, God.
Yeah, but that I think that was
That's what you do with a BA in English, isn't it?
That is exactly what you do with a BA.
So look, one of my favourite moments of music, and it didn't involve being well prepared at all, but we were on tour together in 2000. 16?
Don't even say that. That's not a thing. That's a complete lie. The year 2000 was actually only 4 years ago. People have added these numbers as a contrary thing.
Rubbish.
It's all lies.
Added numbers
time
and wrinkles.
Is all lies.
So
I'm 25.
A couple of years ago in the year 2000, we were on tour we started in San Francisco and went to Minnesota for Choral Fest 2000, which was a big festival of boys choirs, essentially. It was just a good old jamboree of choral music. And
it really was.
Trevor was one of these amazing people who was right into what he was doing, whereas I was kind of like, I just wanted to go to America. And
I also like to party and have fun.
Yeah. It's true. Like you managed to get a good balance, whereas I just slept all day during all the choral stuff, and went out at night. But we had this amazing amazing opportunity where we had the vocal consorts. There's probably 10 or 12 of us, something like that.
I think that tour, there might have only been 8 of us.
Okay, yeah. There was some.
Yeah, but
there was it, us.
Yeah, between had 8 and 12.
A group from Finland called Tulla.
Yeah.
Who was an amazing a cappella group from there. And also the King Singers, who are the best at what they do. Yeah. traditional choral a cappella, and they're just splendid.
They're the ones you buy like your Christmas album from. Aren't they?
They do the like beautiful. That's King's College, quite Cambridge. Yeah. And the King's Singers were actually, they all used to sing with the Kings.
Yeah.
King's Singers.
Okay.
And they were kind of like the Suede is to the Australian Boys Choir.
Right.
You know, they became cool and did their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys were just top of the game. And at the end of this concert that we did together, all three groups sort of stood in a big semicircle and we sung Beeble's Ave Maria, which is this incredible piece that's got two choirs essentially, a four-part and a three-part. So it's a seven-part song and you have call and response and this amazing, I'll put a link of it on the website, an amazing piece of music. And all the groups stood together in this big semicircle and we just wept. Like there was just this moment where it was so beautiful and the music was so, the audience didn't exist anymore. I was just singing for all these other guys that we'd been on this amazing trip with, and that was one of the things that I came back from that tour and started Suede.
Were the Cantus boys in that as well? I think.
Cantus were in town. Sort of, yeah,
I don't know if they sang that with us. But anyway,
Yeah, that was one of the moments. Like that's why I started Suede, because I came back from that with having those moments of like where music went from being this weird thing I did when I wasn't doing the rest of life, and it became a singer as like, I want to do that. I want to do that thing, that feeling that I had there, that feeling of connection with the people around me, that feeling of that moment where I was fully connected with something, like that's what I want to do. And I didn't want to do it in a tuxedo. I didn't want to do it holding music. I didn't want to do it standing still, but I wanted to do that thing.
That's what
inspired me. And that piece, Beeble, Ave Maria, I want that at my wedding. That really changed me, that moment. That was an interesting thing that we shared. I don't know.
Something particularly powerful about the human voice, though. Like it's when you sing with a group of people and it works, you know it's working.
Yeah,
it's like there's the just, best feeling in the world. Isn't
it's oxytocin, they reckon. Yeah. Like it's it's orgasm chemicals. That's why we're enjoying it so.
But
much.
There's some of it about similar training too. I mean, I work with Henry Chu a lot, who was in that group as well. He did an opera with me last year that I was conducting. And I know when Henry and I sing together, you know, Henry's now, you know, this incredible opera soloist, and I'm mostly a conductor that sings pop rock music and music theatre and cabaret. But when we sing together, the voices connect in this really interesting way, and I think it's because of the common training.
Mm.
And we had that in Avenue Q. I mean, I know this is all I'm talking about at the moment because it's all my brain's doing.
It's in your head. Yeah.
Where the three leads sang I Wish I Could Go Back to College for the first time.
Mm.
And it's this beautiful three-part harmony thing, and it just clicked in the very first time they sang it together.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, what is that? And I think it's common training that, you know, I think if we had a consort reunion from that tour, we'd actually still sound half decent because there's something ingrained in the way that we think.
Yeah,
and the way that we do
things. I'd love you guys to belt something out right now that would make me happy.
No, look, let's face it, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. We've got up really early to be here, right?
I wouldn't mind, believe it or not, walking on air. That would be pretty good.
But it's the reason why, like, singing with Loz, my brother, and with Sammy Q, like, it's the same thing. We spent our childhoods together singing. Mm. Like, we have similar training. We have a similar language to express ourselves and we know, you know, we know
shortcuts. You have little shortcuts in.
But that's where it comes back to training, doesn't it? It comes back to that basic, like the strength of the education, like at the very core of it, you know.
And I think we were pretty very, very lucky.
Beautifully trained,
I was going to say blessed, #blessed. But, you know, it's so not something I want to say out loud. But we were very fortunate in the musical training that we got through the Australian Boys Choir.
Sure.
You know, the musical skills that I just second to none.
Absolutely, and at the time, you know,
it was just what we did.
Well, that's it's funny because it wasn't even for me. My oldest brother Loz was in the choir because one of his friends was doing it. He really wanted to be in it.
Yeah, right.
And then my next brother Andrew was in the choir because Loz was doing it, and he was fiercely competitive with Loz, and he just wanted to make sure he was better than Loz. And I was in the choir because my parents had to drive to the, you know, yeah, to choir practice on a fucking Monday and a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they'd be fucked if they were going to have. Yeah. They only had one car.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then hilariously, you're probably the one that's using it the most in your later life.
Yeah.
And that's which is amazing. Isn't
that's
it?
The interesting thing for me. Like, I run choirs now, and I, you know, vocal music's become my thing.
Yeah.
But what I understand is not, like, I don't speak to the people who turn up prepared and, you know, the people yeah. who are good. The people I see value in it are the me in it, the people who just want to turn up and have fun. And it's like, yeah. so how do I run a good choir for those people? How do I make a choir for people who are going to go home and not spend any more time than their 2 hours on a Thursday? How am just I going to
make it work?
How am I going to make what's the best I can get out of that? Because that's what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
For me, that thing is, you know, means to an end. If you're running a community choir, for example, it's not about really excellence. Exciting. It's about an experience.
That sort of thing's also really exciting. And it's what the piano bar thing does for me is it plays with the other side of your brain, which is the spontaneity.
Yeah.
Which is the that reading the room. And it's like surfing, you know. It's seeing what's going on, throwing something out there. And sometimes you fall off and you play a song that just dies. Mm. And everyone, no, they don't leave the room, but, you know. And that's really fun. It's sort of dangerous.
So what's your go-to? What's your go-to numbers in a piano bar that you know will always work?
Uptown Girl.
Yep.
Mm, yep.
As soon as it's always played
at a wedding, isn't it?
Oh, the crowd does the rest.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, okay, good, gotcha.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
We had in Tassie this moment where a beatboxer got up and he was like, he's from Singapore, so he's got an American accent. He's like, all right, so guys, like, I just wanted to do something. I'm going to beatbox, but I just want a song that you all know. So, you can dance.
Yeah.
That's all he had to sing. And the rest of the song, like, everyone else took care of. It was like, and I'm fucking, you know, I'm not a big fan of ABBA, but I respect the fact that one.
Oh, yeah.
Phrase. You can dance. Mama three fucking words. And everyone knows.
Everyone's like, yep, know exactly what that is.
That song is, it's so recognisable. Yeah.
Uptown Girl. What's give us a few more.
Oh, what are the other immediate go-tos? Believe it or not, I do pull out quite a lot. That's You're the Voice is the standard, is my sort of standard closer.
Talk to me about it.
Yeah, that song just kills. It's just incredible. That was the really interesting thing about doing work in America and on the American cruise ships and around Europe. They don't know it. So it just doesn't hit.
Heathens.
It doesn't. Yeah. I know. Except in Amsterdam.
Ah.
For some reason, Farnham was a hit in the Netherlands.
But I believe that. Apparently in Scotland. The Dutch are very connected to us.
Well, that'd be the bagpipes, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently, like Loz was saying when he lived in like Cork in Northern Ireland for a while, he said, you know, the jukebox, everyone gets up and sings all the time in Ireland, but You're the Voice in particular was on regular rotation. That was a huge thing.
Yeah.
Also in Sweden, there was a Swedish a cappella group, Something for Five. I'll find that out and put it on the website, but they did a cover of it. Heart. The group that sang "All I Wanna Do Is Make Love to You," they had a cover of that on their greatest hits.
They did of "You're the Voice." Yeah, they did, and it's amazing.
It's actually
because that woman can sing anything.
Mm.
Have you seen her do? She at the Washington Center. What are they called? I'm making stuff up now. But the Kennedy Center Honors. They honored Led Zeppelin, and she Nancy, I can't think of her surname, which is terrible.
I never remember anybody's names.
She sang Stairway to Heaven front of the Robert Plant and the rest of the band. And it was this incredible arrangement that started just with the guitar and her, opened up into a string section, opened up into a band, opened up into a full gospel choir.
Wow.
It was phenomenal. But her singing it is just like, holy shit.
We need that YouTube.
That woman can sing. Yep.
Since figured out that that whole riff was totally plagiarized.
Really?
Yeah, Stairway to Heaven. It's in the courts at the moment.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Surely.
Totally plagiarized by another folk singer.
Surely it's totally past the time when they can sue for that.
Well, fuck, man.
Who knows? I know, right?
scary.
That's sad.
It's getting scary. It's getting. We've talked about this before. The fact that people can be sued for having a drum beat.
Come on, give us a break.
Yeah, it's like people getting sued for a drum beat. It's like, fucking hell. Like, I'm sure they weren't the first person to use that drum beat.
Yeah.
I've heard it all. There's some African guy that doesn't have great lawyers. that probably did it first. Let's get real here.
That's so true. Oh, goodness.
I think the more fun... The other fun games I love to play in a piano bar is... One of the other go-tos, Total Eclipse of the Heart, every time. And I make the audience stand up and actually physically turn around. That's always fun.
There's that great literal translation video that was done of that.
That's great. And then Alanis Morissette, You Ought to Know. If I'm feeling a bit angry and just want to vent.
I love that song.
You just see everyone start yelling.
And you know what I think is good for that too? Sheryl Crow's If It Makes You Happy. That is
But not everyone knows enough words.
That's true. You just know the bit in there.
It's one of those ones. But the fun games I love to play is where I can take a crowd. And every now and then, you know, there's certain flags that if I play certain 90s music and it, like, if I play that game of, okay, you're a early 90s crowd. Okay, you're an Australian early 90s crowd. Okay, you're understanding 1927. This is good. Yeah. This is going somewhere. If I can get a crowd to enjoy Rat Cats, Don't Go Now.
Which is one
of the great songs of the Australian music repertoire.
Well, you can have my heart and have my soul.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, but I reckon there's only about an age window of about plus or minus 3 years that really get it.
Yeah.
And if I've got that crowd in the room and I know I can play Don't Go Now and it goes off, I'm like, I'm a happy person.
So like 91, 93?
Yeah, I'm going to go with 91, 92, 93. Yeah. Yeah, Blind Love.
Yeah.
I have that album.
Was his name Simon?
Simon Day.
Day, yeah.
Yeah. Them and the Sharp. The Sharp was my other go-to, but I never pull out the Sharp in a piano bar.
Dizzy? Some Dizzy.
My head. Was that Rat Cat? No, that wasn't later. That's 94.
It's Vic Reeves and the Wonder Stuff.
Yes. Yeah, good one.
I can't believe you can remember that.
EMF. Oh, you're unbelievable. Oh, what the fuck? Oh, it's degenerating.
It's
degenerating with the bottle of the artesian Grenache Shiraz Mataro that we're drinking, 2013.
Which is quite delightful.
Allegiance wine.
It's pretty good. It's
very
a lot.
Pleasant.
Yeah, it's a good breakfast wine.
It is very clean.
We should have started with this because it's a lot brighter. And
it is, yeah.
The other one was so just lush and developed.
Mm. And
sleepy. Mm. It was a bit sleep-making, that one. Yeah, this one's a bit more perky. Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about this the piano bar at Butterfly Club, because they've moved in the last few years.
Three years ago now they moved from South Melbourne to the city.
Yep.
And it's now built to the point where they're insanely busy most of the time, which is really, really great.
So it's Neville and David?
No, Neville and David aren't involved anymore. They sold the business, I think, 5 years ago.
Wow, okay.
The new owner is named Simone Pulga.
Ah, he's Simone, I know him.
Who's an excellent human and a really smart business person. And there's a few other people involved in the ownership of it as well, but Simone's kind of the prime owner. And so now the upstairs room, the cabaret room, which has at least two shows in it a night, has 70 seats and is raked. So for anyone that remembers the old South Melbourne venue, it was an old shop front.
Oh, yeah. And it was fun. And
theoretically it seated 50 people, but that was if you were very skinny and sat on top of... Like, you had to be very familiar with all
people on your lap. Yeah, exactly.
And I loved that room. You know, we did a lot of great, crazy stuff in that room.
I did a couple of good shows in there too.
Yeah. It's good fun. But the new venue is incredible. And they're getting really, there's still a lot of new cabaret performers coming in, trying their first show, or, you know, more established performers. A lot of comedies coming through now as well, especially through the comedy festival, because of course they're just off Little Collins Street in Carson Place, right in the centre of the city. So it's really close to the Melbourne Town Hall hub for comedy festivals. So it's going gangbusters for them, that move.
Yeah.
The move, I think, was also done in a very brilliant way, in that they specifically recreated as much of the old venue as they could. So you walk into the new venue, I mean, three-year-old venue now, but and it feels exactly like the South Melbourne thing, which,
that's nice.
You know, that cozy,
it's very intimate and
that cozy lounge room area that had all the kitsch everywhere.
Trinkets.
It's still got exactly that because they took photographs of where everything was.
Everything good.
And transferred it in boxes on trams because the 109 tram went from the old venue to the new venue. Wow. So all these volunteers took all of the kitsch trinkets the new venue and they reconstructed exactly as it is.
For those of you who have never been,
the setup, for those of you that have never been,
you
come,
should come.
Simple.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the old venue used to have sort of, you know, was very like wood panelled walls and sort of deer heads and things stuck to
I used to describe it as sort of everything you've ever, that was ever in your grandmother's house times a million.
Yeah.
And everything you've ever had a nightmare about is on those walls somewhere, you know. Those portraits with the moving eyes and the weird paintings of pirate ships and it's all there.
Mm.
And it's all still
there. All the trinkets, like every surface. There was no surface without a thing on there.
Someone said to me once, "Who dusts this place?" And I just kind of giggled. It was like,
Nobody.
We just have dim lights.
Yeah, that's right. You don't want to turn the lights on. But the other great thing is that there's a downstairs bar space, which is also a performance space. So on a Friday night, the Big Hoo Ha, who are an improv group, do their show every week. And then from 10:30, I take it over as Trevor's Fab Fridays. And it's this event, and it's so hard to describe because it's sort of loosely based on what you find in some of the New York piano bars like Marie's Crisis or Don't Tell Mama, where it is just a big sing-along bar where I play everything that people want, you know, people just yell at me what they want to hear and we play it, whether it's rock and pop or show tunes or anything, you know. Great. I'm up for it. I'll play it.
What about the Rainbow Connection?
Oh, that often comes out.
Do you do that often?
I do love that song.
I love it. It's beautiful.
I love that song.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. it's great in German too. When I was studying German at university, my friend and I got really bored with the course content, so we went through and translated a whole lot of songs that we found amusing in German. So, warum sind da so viel Lieder über Regenbaum? Und was ist auf die andere Seite? Regenbaum sind Vision, but aber nur Illusionen. It's just...
Our actual vocabulary was authoritarian in German.
Yeah, yeah. Our vocabulary was pretty limited, so we made up some of it.
Yeah,
but then there's an open mic element as well, so a lot of people, you know, come regularly just for the chance to get up and sing.
Nice.
Yeah, and there's these there's regulars that come every week, and we've built this really beautiful little community of people. And I reckon each week there's kind of half the room of people that are there. I wrote an opening number that, you know, is a bit call and response, and everyone, you know, it's now hit the point where it's almost insane. It's become almost like the Rocky Horror Show where people have added their own little elements that have become part of the opening number.
Yeah, and you know if Bob's not there on a Friday because his bit's missing.
Yeah, it's exactly like that, and that's really, really special. And you know, someone came for the first time, and he was making a documentary about his travels. And he said, I've never seen a room where everyone has felt so free. And it was like, that's such a beautiful description.
Yeah.
Everyone's just relaxed and enjoying
being themselves. That's what a good sing-along can do, isn't it? Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Sexuality, gender, race, everything.
All the stuff that shouldn't matter doesn't matter.
Unimportant. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's just singing and having a great time. And I love when new people come in. Like there was a girl last night, Kim. I picked on her a little bit, but in a very friendly way. She was sitting right in the front, and I was playing the opening number, and I was doing the Fab Friday, and the whole crowd sang Fab Friday. And I just turned at the right moment when her face had this look of, what the hell have I walked into? What is this? And so I kind of went, you have the best expression on your face right now. We had a bit of a chat about it. Me on a microphone, her being horribly embarrassed.
Yeah.
And it just became this thing all night. But watching her kind of go relax and then get involved, I'm really, really proud of this thing that we've created. It's special and fun and very late on a Friday every week. You know, the number of times I sit on the couch at 9 p.m. going,
oh,
I have to go to work. And then I get to work and it's not work.
No, it's
fun.
It's
just playing
tunes.
Exactly.
It's
10:30 to 1 every Friday. Yeah. It's a pretty amazing thing.
So how do you remember? Like you sit there with an iPad?
Yeah,
or?
So I've got the iPad there with all of my repertoire on it. There's a million songs, the vocal scores of most musicals. It's all there, so that when someone asks for something really obscure, it's like, you can get it, I've probably got that. And the internet.
Yeah.
The internet's great. What do we do before the internet?
See, I was on. I've done a fair bit of work on cruise ships as well, and I remember doing a month on the Pacific Dawn, and there was a guy, Jesse, a Filipino guy, as a lot of cruise ship stuff are.
Did he have a girlfriend, or did you constantly sing Jesse's Girl to him?
I'd lean, honestly, more towards Joshua Caddis and Jesse, personally.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. I hate that song. That is one of the songs. Jesse paints the picture. That Joshua Caddis and Taylor Swift are on my no playlist.
Wow.
I know. It Taylor seems a little Swift harsh. Taylor Swift
on your no playlist?
I used to get so many, on the ships, I'd get beautiful. So many requests. And in Germany, so many requests to play Joshua Caddis. And it got to the point of, okay, I'm going to learn Jesse. I'm going to do it.
You know those four chords, you'll be right.
I started listening, but I don't know the verse. Like, I cannot sing you a scrap of the verse. So I started listening to it, and it's just so sugary. I actually felt nauseous singing, and I went, nah, can't
she
do it.
She asked me how can't the cat's been. Nah. She said, Moses, he's just fine.
Yeah. No. The Taylor Swift thing is a longer thing, and that's changing too. Brian Adams has changed my opinion of Taylor Swift.
Oh.
Most brilliant album of 2015, putting it out there, was Ryan Adams did a complete re-record of Taylor Swift's 1989 album.
Wow.
And I've never been a huge Ryan Adams fan. He was always that guy that was just, he's alt country kind of thing.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And he was always just too cool for me. Like, lots of friends would say, I love Ryan Adams. And I'd go, yep, don't get it. Just don't get it. And I thought Taylor Swift was kind of the same. It's like just sugary pop. But then him doing her songs made me realise that her songs are actually really good songs. They're actually very, very well written.
Oh, very well written.
And stand the test of being reinterpreted, which is a big test that it's not actually the production values on the song.
Yeah, all the version stuff of hers that I've heard of her song, it works really well,
But it also made me appreciate Ryan Adams because it was like, okay, and you totally understand your style and are able to take these songs that are a world away from it and really make something new out of them. So it elevates both artists for me.
But what do you think about... That's
a lot from your cruise ship story, I'm sorry. Jesse, the piano bar
guy. That's why we're here.
Come back to Jesse.
Yeah, we're all about the waffle.
I'm more about the AFL. The WAFL's lost its relevance, so waka, waka. Dad joke.
Look, Jesse the piano bar guy, he...
Now I'm just singing Paints a Picture about how it's going to be. I was so happy.
He never played that song.
Singing I Wish That I Was Jesse. I was so happy with that song for him.
Yeah, well, too bad.
You've changed his theme song. it's like the video. Beautiful. It's like the video re-release of Dawson's Creek where they changed the theme song because they couldn't have the rights of I Don't Wanna Wait.
I tried to buy that on iTunes the other day, and
I don't
want to
wait, Paula Cole.
And I bought a great song, and I bought this
great TV.
You know, one of those shitty, you know, like those albums of love songs where it's all the songs, but they get studio artists.
Oh no!
And I'm it's recorded by Paula Kolb. Paula Cole with a K.
Like what they have to do in pump classes at gym. They have to do all the interpreter because they're not allowed to play the real thing because of some APRA licensing.
Really?
So you have to listen to the bullshit, like, B version.
No. Like, you just got to go to a shitter gym that doesn't care about APRA.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
so
terrible
because
you're in the middle
of
doing chest pumps and you think,
what
is
that?
This?
And it's just nearly there. That's the offensive thing.
Yeah,
like, like we talked about earlier, if it's going to be different, it may as well be really different or reinterpreted.
Yeah, totally.
When you've got a shit studio artist. Well, I shouldn't say shit studio artist. They're fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But they're being told to sing exactly.
There's probably one singer doing 12 different other singers.
Now do Celine.
So you tried to buy Dawson's Creek soundtrack.
And I got the shit version. Anyway, Jesse, the piano bar guy, he sat there every night on his grand piano, and on his feet he had a little sort of, it was essentially the organ, the keys for, so he could play bass notes of all the songs with his feet while he played.
Oh, wow.
And he had a little box that you could just set a beat. Just very minimal drum beats.
Yeah.
Fucking amazing. And this guy knew, he never used any prompts. Yeah. It was all in his head.
Yeah.
And
but I bet he can't drink and play, and I bet he doesn't know how to have fun.
He was very serious
about
what he did.
He's got the wrong theme song, so I think, Trevor, you might be onto something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's chosen Joshua Catterson. He's not the guy for me to hang out with. I'm sorry.
Hey,
Jesse.
Don't put that on him. Sorry, that Jesse. Was me, man. That was me. And I'll stand by Catterson.
Do you tend to do that when you meet people? Do you give them a little song? Like, do you associate people's.
No.
Not necessarily?
Not really. Mm. Not so much.
What about your close friends? Do they have themes?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, they don't. They just often have weird ways I say their name.
Okay. You nicknames.
Know, like, do you remember Jenny Allen that used to work with me at the boys' choir? She's married now. Her surname is Tom, but she's always Jenny Allen. Like, her name is not Jenny. Her name in my head is Jenny Allen.
And it's one syllable.
Hey, Jenny Allen.
Jenny Allen.
Yeah, yeah. More like that. And I hate that I do this, but I give my band members nicknames. Mm. And that's a hangover from the director I used to work with a lot in Perth when I was training, is he would have a nickname for everyone, John Milson. Amazing man. No teeth, chronic smoker, was meant to die of emphysema for most of the time I worked with him, and it didn't. He only died a couple of years ago, actually. But always had a cigarette in his mouth, and he, big T, how you doing today? So I maybe it's a nod to Mills, but maybe it's just me getting old and decrepit and terrifying. I do have my own teeth, for those of you that haven't seen me.
Oh, I'm so glad that you do.
We'll put a photo of you on the
of
website.
My teeth,
for
of my teeth, just to prove it.
Just
the teeth in a glass.
Oh, dear. When we get our dental guest in, we'll get them to have a look at it.
I went to the dentist for the first time in 10 years in December.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And was it good news or bad news?
Oh, look, there was a lot of money outlaid after it.
Yes,
I finally went. So I stopped going because 10 years ago they said, oh, now next time you come we'll need to look at your wisdom teeth. And I went, great. And so I didn't go back. and then finally the pain said to me, you need to go to a dentist. So I did. And yeah.
You had them removed?
Only one.
Okay, that's
only
good.
Only one. Mm-hmm. Like, this dentist gained endless respect to the point where I'm going back next week.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm actually going for 6 months. Yeah, I'm pretty proud of myself.
6 month checkup.
I feel very grown up.
Yes, it's
but,
very grown up.
Kids don't leave at 10 years to go to the dentist. Kids listening at home. But he kind of went, look, one of them has to be removed, but the other three we can fill and there's space in your mouth for them. And it's
You've
fine.
Got a pretty big mouth. Like,
basically he said, look, it's been so long that you're used to them in your mouth. They're there.
Yeah.
They're fine.
Mm.
I sort of thought I got to the point with my wisdom teeth. I had a lot of pain for a long, long time. And I thought,
and isn't it amazing how you can justify that pain in your life?
Yeah. Because
the excuses you make that I don't need to eat on that side of my mouth.
Yeah.
The whole other side of my mouth.
Just compensate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I was like, they're called wisdom teeth. It's not the teeth that are wise. It's the decision just to get it over and done with and get the fucking things out. Yeah. That's what's wise. Yeah. And I had to do it just before I went overseas. At one point I was like, I wanted to get it done in Taiwan because I could get it pretty cheap. I had good contacts over there. And my mother convinced me otherwise. But
I'm so glad she did.
She's a wise woman. Did you give
her
the teeth?
We have Medicare for a reason.
Well, Taiwan has better Medicare than we do. Okay. So and I've got people in the biz. But anyway, I got them here.
Is that where you got the plastic surgery too?
Well, Well, that wasn't cheap, Trevor.
And we should
this doesn't come
we
easy.
We shouldn't talk about the gender reassignment either, should we? You know.
No. Or the reassignment.
Christine is such a lovely girl. I remember her so well.
I'm just indecisive, you know. I just like mixing it up. But that decision, and for me, I found a dentist, and I was like, I want to come in. I want you to knock me out, and I want to come out. I want all of them gone. I never want to have to see you again. And it was great.
Yeah,
it was great. It was really painful. I had a tough recovery, and then like 2 days later, I flew I flew off to Bali or Thailand or something. I had an awesome holiday. I was like, really glad I'm wise. I feel wiser now for just doing it.
And just that moment of, your life is much better without that pain constantly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who knew?
Who knew? Exactly.
And I try and remind myself, there's a point when I walk up towards the shops, there's a set of lights there that I often come back to thinking of just reminding myself to be to have gratitude for the pain that I'm not in.
Yeah.
Because, like...
Yeah. Why at those lights? What's...
Because I think...
Why is that particular place...
I think you've got to wait for it for a really long time for the green man.
I think I... When it first happened and when I first left the house after the, you know, the anaesthetic wore off or anything, I was at those lights waiting and I made a sort of, you know, promise to myself. Pledge. I don't ever want to forget what that pain was like and how grateful I am not to be in pain.
Yeah.
I think because when I get back there, it strikes me again. And I'm happy that I don't have knee pain anymore after. Mm. I'm happy my shoulder doesn't hurt anymore. I'm happy for all the things that I've been through. Mm. It's a good way to be. It's nice to have those little reminders of, you know. Right. I don't have a cold. But also
pain's an interesting thing because you don't sort of appreciate how debilitating it is until you're dealing with it. And then you think, oh, it's all these things I've just taken for granted in my life that when I didn't have it. And so now when you do find yourself pain-free again, you think, oh, thank goodness, I really have to appreciate that I can just lift my arm above my head easily or whatever it might be, you know, or eat on both sides of your mouth or whatever both it sides is. Of my mouth. Exactly.
Twice as much food in my mouth at once.
You can order steak again without thinking twice.
You can take the gratitude thing so far. You're like, oh well, I'm so happy that I'm not blind and deaf like Amanda Keller. I'm so
Amanda
happy.
Keller, Helen Keller.
So Helen Keller.
Amanda Keller. Amanda Keller's doing fine.
Amanda Keller that was in the living room.
Yeah. her TV career is incredible if she's actually blind and deaf. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's did wonder why there was often the delay when she was interviewing people. That's why she's so grateful. You know what I mean? Like, if you...
Amanda Keller.
You know, her sister. No one talks about her. No one talks about her sister. She got all the limelight.
Oh, dear.
That's funny.
But, you know, you can take the gratitude thing too far. Like, there's so many things you could be. But then when you start thinking about what's the problem with taking it too far? Like, what's the problem with just being happy about all the things that are good?
Yeah.
At a moment, actually, Wednesday this week, where I texted a friend and just sort of said, I just want you to know, because I'm not very good at acknowledging this for myself, that I'm really happy today. Yeah. That I've woken up really excited about going to rehearsals.
Yeah.
That I'm really enjoying what I'm working on. I'm getting lots done. I'm in a really good place. And I just need to tell someone that.
Yeah. So that it's on the record. So your happy days so on the record.
More
yeah.
than just me acknowledging it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's taken it a step further so that.
But that's what they say with that gratitude stuff, isn't it? That sometimes what you have to do is to share what you're grateful for with others and that actually kind of
just not on Facebook with a hashtag.
I know. Yeah.
You know, tell someone you like, not everyone.
Yeah. And tell the person you're grateful for that you're grateful for them. That, but you don't need to advertise that fact to everyone else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's true.
It's the floor.
Don't give me a 7-day gratitude challenge.
It's the floor of Facebook. I've got some people on Facebook who what I want to ask them is, where do you go to get all these inspirational pictures that you keep posting? Is there a website that you subscribe to?
Do you actually Google image sunshine happiness images? Yes,
probably.
Rainbow unicorns.
Moments of beauty.
Where the fuck do you get them? I mean,
prefer to use Facebook for much more valuable things like analysing Dawson's Creek episodes.
That's why I've blocked you as a friend.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that because you've made that choice and I can still put it out there and see you've done the sensible thing. Yeah. It's like you don't care that Jane Lynch is actually Pacey's mum. That was my big realization this week.
Really?
Sue Sylvester, get that.
Oh my God.
Played Pacey's mum in an episode.
Incredible.
Yeah, I know, right? He doesn't care at all.
What was the deal with
your lack of interest? Oh, no, is I almost suddenly got confused
between Dawson's Creek and what was the one that
she was a bit player. She had
no, but what was that other show? Party of Five.
Oh, I wasn't into it.
Oh, see, I really love it. And I often get them warped in my head. He was hot.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he was so hot. He was all over my bedroom wall.
Literally. Thinly sliced.
All over my bedroom wall. Posters of him. Video hits. Right. Video hits.
Not actually.
Everywhere.
Not actually Absolutely. Him. All over your bedroom wall.
Well, I wish he had a bed.
It wasn't. It wasn't like that little bit of Club Retro.
Bit of nose juice.
Oh, dear. Oh, God. I witnessed, I was on the treadmill this morning and I it sort of like looks out over a laneway in South Melbourne. And
are you just boasting about the fact that you exercised?
No. I didn't do anything particularly harrowing, so no, yeah. Not really. And I watched this man do a bush blow, which was so gruesome. So he tried to, he was talking to a friend and he went to bush blow.
He did that with someone else present.
Somebody else was there and he bush blew in this laneway. But this is, the snot just quickly, obviously...
This is blowing your nose without a hanky or a tissue.
Oh, yeah, sorry if you don't know this. Yeah, so he went to bush blow, but obviously the snot came back and got him. So then he was like walking behind his friend, sort of rubbing it on his jumper. I said, what the hell is going on there? It was disgusting. It was the most revolting, graphic thing I've ever seen. I just, sorry.
But yeah, you go back to those shows like Dawson's Creek and Party of Five and seeing who's done... They're not even cameos. They're bit parts that have gone on to major careers.
Yeah, incredible.
Dawson's aunt in one episode is actually Claire from Modern Family. Completely different face.
That's
but
amazing.
You spent that, she was much younger, you spent a whole lot of time going, why do I know that woman? Oh, my God, it's Claire from Modern Family.
But, you know, you must have very good facial recall if you can actually make
no
that
idea
connection.
What people's names are. In real life, too. Recall faces, I call a lot of people. Hey, mate.
Colonel Peachy, just in case it's been uncomfortable.
Okay, got it. Yeah, good, in case it's unclear. I'll write them down.
Although I have been known to be the Colonel in some episodes. So
really?
Just go for it.
Who
just
did
jump
that?
Right in, Trevor.
Name names.
Well, it's fine. Sometimes I just need to take over. It's okay.
Yeah.
As it happens.
So why was that your first introduction? Why doesn't he normally let you introduce?
No, he just normally does. That's the way it normally is. Because he presses play. You know, presses go, so he just normally is the first person to start talking.
And you're not going to edit out the click at the beginning.
No.
It was the cue, are you?
Oh, that'll go on top of the theme music.
The magic of podcasting.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, these are the secrets that you're not allowed into.
It is a great
backstage pass.
It is a truly great platform.
Click,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's better than a winky.
it's to
Amanda Keller.
Yeah, exactly. Is she deaf as well as blind? Though? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, she was both.
She was both. I don't think the clicker worked for other.
And she had no legs, but no one. No one talks about her.
That's why she's always on the couch.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I just about have to do another click and wrap things up. We're well over time, but you know we don't really give two shits about the time. But I want to make sure that we cover making sure we get plugs for all the amazing stuff you're doing. One is Avenue Q, which people should go to ticketek.com.au.
And book now, because if you book right now, actually when we're recording the episode and just sort of sense that we're talking about this, then it might get extended. There might be an extension.
Mm. Nice. So we'll get this out quick, smart.
And there's
make
still
sure
good seats
happens.
Available, so get into it.
It's a brilliant show. Like,
it's so funny. Yeah.
I mean, for people who've got an idea in their head about what music theatre is, I don't know, it's a fusion of so many genres and
it's musical
and so
comedy
things.
At its greatest.
And, you know, hit songs like Everyone's a Little Bit Racist and Schadenfreude, the German word for taking pleasure at the pain of others. These are some of the songs from the show. And It Sucks to Be Me. Of course.
Yeah, I love that one.
At all
time.
Internet is for porn, and if you were gay, that would be okay. Puppets singing these songs. That's what you can look forward to.
I guess it is a must see if you haven't seen the show. Even if you have, go and see this version
new
of the
cast.
Show.
Great cast.
Apart from the guy's music director, who's a bit bloody ordinary. Everyone else is fantastic.
But he's in a pit, so you only have to look at the back of his head if you choose to look down.
It's quite a nice back of head.
Thank you.
I haven't had a chance to look. Oh no, I've got the mirror here. That's quite
nice.
I've been working on it.
There's also Trevor's Fab Fridays.
Got it done cheaply.
don't miss your chance to see Trevor's Fab Fridays, 10:30 PM at the Butterfly Club.
And it's free. You don't even need to buy tickets. You just turn up.
It's free.
Turn up by drinks, though.
Just don't sit at the front because Trevor will pick at you for your facial expressions.
But in a very friendly, loving, caring,
and join
friendly
in the
way.
Theme song. Yeah.
You know, she was my best friend by the end of the night last night.
Yeah. But there's a scene going on there. There's a whole thing that never existed before. There's a scene. Like there's a whole Melbourne piano bar scene that's happening. So get involved and be part of it because it's not happening anywhere else in the world. It's very specific here. I think that's it. Is there anything else I need to, plug
for you? No, I think that pretty much plugs most of the major things.
Get a website.
Plugs most of the holes. TrevorJones.com.au.
There you go. TrevorJones.com.au
with a calendar. You can see what I was doing in, I think, August last year is the last time it's
been updated. Listed
what I was doing. So if you're really interested in what I was doing in August last year, you could check that out. Mm. Yeah.
Somebody could do a collage of where you've been.
My mum, so often, every time I ring home, mum goes, "Now, you haven't updated your dates on your website, so I don't know what you're doing with your life at the moment."
But that's nice when your website's actually for your mum.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
I think she's actually the only person that looks at it because she's banned from Facebook.
Right.
Mm. Or Facebook, Trevor Jones Entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor Jones Entertainer.
Is my Facebook page.
Cool. Get amongst it. We'll put
links to all these things.
We'll put links to all these things on the website. I like it.
Also, if you believe that Trevor or the Colonel have not mentioned particularly good party starters, piano bar style, we would love to know your suggestions. Put them on our Facebook page and or Trevor's Facebook page because we'd love your suggestions. It's always really, really welcome.
Hold On, Wilson Phillips is another one.
Oh, that's
but mostly a hen tonight one because of Bridesmaids.
Yep.
Yeah. Jessie's Girl.
Yeah,
Jessie's Girl, always good.
Do you ever do Change the Wheel?
Yeah, again, it doesn't quite fly.
Oh, see, like, I just, all the ones I like.
Yeah, they're great songs. They're good. But it's about how many things people remember.
Yes.
Memorable verses are really important.
I only remember the chorus for all those things. Yeah, that's true. Right.
And if a verse isn't great and you spend a long time getting there, it's like there's nothing more boring than, what is this? Or a memorable riff.
Yes, you know, like, something that...
Like that Mamma Mia. As soon as you hear it.
Oh, so that's Joshua Catterson. You wouldn't
sorry. I just knew I felt started feeling a bit funny in the tummy.
Awesome. Well, I'm not going to close things off. I'm going to click my fingers and someone else is just going to do it for me.
Thanks for listening, listeners. It's been great having you on board, Trevor.
Thanks so much for having me.
Come back for another episode. You're more than welcome if you'd like to. Yeah, it'd be fantastic. Tell us how Avenue Q goes. We'd love to hear all about it.
And we can you know, shout down all of other people's party starters ideas.
Why not? It's a great idea. It's a great absolutely. One. No, that one just doesn't work. It's true. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right.
You try playing Groovers in the Heart with just a piano.
That is actually very hard to do. There's so much going on. There's too many parts. Doesn't work. Actually, people do remember that when you're making suggestions. Yeah. It's just
No, don't. I love the challenge.
Okay. That's good. Okay. Cool. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening. Get on board. Come and check us out, peachandthekernel.com and or Facebook, Peach and the Colonel. And we'd love your suggestions. Lovely. Thank you for listening. Bye.